south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Let's start out today with a bit of fluff, but some interesting fluff. Now, you listeners out there who've been following this show for a long time, you know about Expat Eddie and his model girlfriend. You've heard plenty of stories about the trials and tribulations of that gringo-Latina match, haven't you? Now, I mentioned before that she's pretty well known as a runway model in El Salvador. I'll bet you didn't even know they had runway models or even runways in El Salvador, except maybe at the airport. Now, as small as it is, El Salvador's an entire country, so you gotta expect it has some kind of a fashion scene. Doesn't every country have an active fashion scene going down, with the possible exception of North Korea? So anyway, Eddie's girlfriend's one of the girls that wriggles down those runways, in a high fashion sense though. She basically models the clothes that no average Latin American girl could ever afford. Now, I don't know the prices of these things, but you can tell that by the crowd of people that shows up at these runway shows. It's that stuck-up 1 or 2% of the ladies that bring along their entourage, a bodyguard, a mate or two. You know the type. Yeah, right. I doubt it. You just don't see that kind of stuff up in the first world, unless, of course, you're in Hollywood, I guess. Anyway, I haven't seen Expat Eddie in a long time, so recently he invited me to a big fashion show gig at the Princess Hotel in El Salvador, and normally those kind of things are simply dead boring to me. That includes baptisms and confirmations and quinceañeros parties and children's birthday parties, etc., etc. All those kind of things generally are dead boring after about 20 minutes. So I wasn't expecting too much, but it was an excuse to catch up with Expat Eddie again, since every time I run into him, he's got about 10 great stories. Anyway, I'm sitting down with Eddie on the sidelines of the runway there, and he started telling me that just last week, the guard at one of his restaurants discharged his shotgun accidentally and sprayed Eddie's foot. I shouldn't laugh, huh? Anyway, he got a few BBs in his left foot. And I said, well, did you fire him? And Eddie said, nah, he's just a klutz. He's an old guy, a couple of kids and all that. He's been with me a while, so I just moved him to the kitchen. Then Eddie admitted that the old guy talked him into hiring his 20-something-year-old kid as the new guard. And then I said, Eddie, you know how ridiculous that would sound to a first-world person? Think of it. Only in Latin America could you let one of your employees shoot you. Then after that, you give him a promotion and hire his kid, too. So Eddie said, Johnny, you know about Latin workers. When you find a really good, honest one, even if he's a klutz, you keep him on, and you hire his wife and kids, too. It does run in families, you know. I see it all the time. Hopefully not the klutzy part, but the honesty and the work ethic part. Oh, and by the way, when I said after the guy shot him, Eddie gave him a promotion, that's because if you have a business down here and you have one of those armed guards with a shotgun, that is generally the lowest level, lowest paying job on the totem pole. Because you really just sit around and do absolutely nothing on your whole shift. And you know, I've had enough businesses myself with armed guards, etc., that I can vouch for the fact that nearly every one of my own guards, you know, with the uniform and the shotgun, were basically just taking up space like a scarecrow or a cigar store Indian, standing outside looking thick and clueless. The truth is, none of my guards had ever even shot a gun. Yep, just like scarecrows or cigar store Indians. But I digress. Back to the fashion show. Now, Eddie was sitting to my left, and the guy sitting next to me, the guy on my right, was a very short but very well-dressed, handsome-looking younger version of Antonio Banderas, only this guy was about 5'2". And by the way, I noticed he was sporting what most wealthy young Latin guys seem to be wearing these days. By the way, so do all the young studs in those Latin soap operas. What I mean is, he had that little five-day-old beard growth going. And with him, I noticed he missed a few spots with the black highlight pencil. I'm not kidding. And it just so happened that this guy and his wife came all the way up from Colombia to be in this show. Actually, it was the guy's wife, not him, in the show. Like I said, he was way too short. Anyway, since there's a lot of dead and wasted time at heady events like this, while everyone else is trying their damnedest to look cool and beautiful, except, of course, yours truly and Eddie. We were there by virtue of Eddie's girlfriend and the Gringo Advantage. And I guess the fact that we had absolutely nothing else to do that day. Now normally, if there's the usual Latin company present, I pop in my earbuds and listen to some MP3s. Now you might think I'm a pompous jerk for saying that, but you haven't been to one of these brain-numbing events, have you? Anyway, in between, I got to talking to this little guy from Colombia. And one of the things that I noticed and said to him after I'd met his girlfriend who was in the show that day, I said to him in the most diplomatic way possible after he said, "What do you think of my girlfriend?" Wink, wink. He said that after she'd left and gone back to work, of course. So anyway, I said in the most diplomatic way possible, you know, she's beautiful and poised and everything, but she doesn't have that typical Colombian slash Venezuelan curvy look. And Eddie backed me up on that, though he was a little less diplomatic. And it was true. She and all the other 10 or 12 models that day, they looked just like first world U.S. and European style runway models. Very tall, thin, light skin, a lot of different shades of blonde and all that. The usual carbon copies of what you see up in the first world. And some of these girls even looked like they bordered on the anorexic. At least some were on the binge and purge diet, I'm sure. So now, the reason why I'm even including this little bit of fluff in the show is because what he said to me next was quite interesting. Now, remember, my comment to the Colombian guy was that his girlfriend model didn't have the so-called Sofia Vergara look that, in the last few years, seems to be the stereotype, according to the rest of the world, when it comes to young Colombian and Venezuelan women. Then he chuckled a bit, and this is what he said. The world stereotype of Colombian and Venezuelan women, sometimes even Brazilian women, you gringos get from seeing the girls in beauty pageants and the occasional one that breaks out internationally like our Sofia or Shakira. But the truth is, in the world of fashion and runway models, etc., he said when it comes to Colombia and even Venezuela, unlike other countries, there are two different fashion worlds that exist side by side that not only rarely cross over, but they don't even like each other. The so-called high-end, highly publicized fashion world, like the event we're at right now, he said, where the models look typically tall and thin, like similar competition in the first world. But, he said, if you go to Colombia, you'll see that there are parallel fashion shows, models with the exaggerated hourglass figures that do represent the world's stereotype of our country. So, he says, you've got the high-class model runway types, and you've got the so-called common or corriente fashion world that typically showcases clothing for the masses. So, you've got the high-end, high-buck fashion world, the one that gets all the media coverage, and you've got the common lower and middle-class fashion world that showcases affordable, sexy, clingy clothes for the masses, and never the twain shall meet. As my new Colombian buddy said, even in the fashion world, it's all about classism. Then he went on to say, the curvy girls that Latin guys drop their jaws over, like Sofia Vergara, are not even allowed to participate in the high fashion world. But, he said, the common fashion shows for the masses in Colombia, the ones that don't get big press coverage, are nevertheless massively popular and heavily attended. Then, of course, my next question was, how'd that happen? How'd you end up having a split in the fashion industry like that? Then he shocked me, and that's hard to do. He said, cocaine. And at first I thought maybe that was his humor, but no, he said it again, cocaine. I said, what? He said cocaine and the early days of the cocaine drug culture produced Colombian girls like Sofia Vergara. And that's when I pulled my earbuds out. Now this guy had my attention. He said it all started in the 1980s in Medellin, Colombia, where Pablo Escobar held court. Remember him? Considered the biggest drug kingpin of all time. He came from Medellin, Colombia, which has about 3 million people, so it's a pretty big city. Now, before the 80s, before the cocaine trade came in, Medellin and all the big Colombian cities were very poor and had a lot of ghettos. Then in the 80s, when the cocaine cartels first formed, in the big cities, starting with Medellin, where Escobar was located, the locals soon began to see just who the drug kingpins were in the neighborhood. And back then, at first, there was really no law enforcement, so money poured in like a river. So the locals spotted these drug dealers on the streets every day, what with all their bling and their new cars and their motorcycles and their houses, etc. And as it turns out, this guy says, one of the problems with Colombia in those days, and to a degree now, is that girls from the poorer neighborhoods could just never get out of that cycle of poverty, except by going to school to get some kind of career in higher education, which was virtually impossible because girls normally have to work a meager job to chip in and support the family. But my new Colombian buddy told me there was another easier way out of that poverty cycle, and that was to either win a beauty pageant or two, which gave you local fame and a leg up, or to somehow attract one of these newly wealthy narco guys in the neighborhood who naturally like to have any number of beautiful, sexy girls hanging around. Now, back then, the Colombian guy said, don't underestimate how many of these narco guys with money there were running around Medellin. There were literally thousands of them. Remember, Medellin was the region that supplied practically all the cocaine to the U.S. back then. So, in the 80s, every neighborhood in Medellin had a well-to-do, high-profile group of narcos working, living, and playing there. Now, what these narco guys would do is that they'd pour a bunch of money into a lot of local enterprises, including local beauty pageants. In fact, the Colombian guy said that was one of their favorite things to do, finance beauty pageants, which naturally drew all the pretty and not-so-pretty girls from the poor and lower classes. Mostly schoolgirls and working girls that never had an opportunity to enter anything like that before. Because, you see, traditionally, poor and middle-class girls were always excluded from the big national beauty pageants. And, he said, that's when the competition for the curves and the butts and the boobs got really intense. Turns out, by the mid-80s, the narco guys even had their own favorite, highly qualified and sometimes not-so-qualified plastic surgeons in the loop. Always available to enhance their wives and girlfriends and mistresses and the girls in the beauty pageants, too. So, like this Colombian guy said, none of these girls, no matter how beautiful, could ever break into haute couture, you know, the high-end fashion slash modeling circuit at the national level. So, in the end, it was Pablo Escobar and his boys that primed the pump for all that plastic surgery and all those curves. And now, of course, those guys are dead and gone. But the beauty pageants and the competition for curves, if anything, has gotten even more intense and now is spreading to the rest of the world via ladies like Sofia Vergara, who, whether you know it or not, single-handedly created a kind of a cottage industry for lonely heart gringos looking to mate and date Colombian girls. There are, in fact, now hundreds of mating and dating hookup sites specifically to that effect. And speaking of Colombian poster girl Sofia Vergara, I hope I'm saying that right. I can never get that name straight. Anyway, who's such a big star up in the States now. My new Colombian buddy said, before any gringo even heard her name before, she was in a ton of Colombian soap operas and TV commercials. That, he said, was before she had any curves at all. He said, look at her now, 5 or 10 operations later. Meanwhile, the rest of the world thinks most Colombian women are born like that. Now, by then, he must have seen that I gave him an incredulous look because he whipped out his iPhone and pulled up a Spanish YouTube video with Sofia Vergara playing a policewoman, a bit player in a 20-year-old soap opera, and he was right. Yep, let's just say that it was her face, all right, but that's about it. And then the guy flipped to another YouTube screen and showed me something, a short video that was really a shocker. And I suggest you check it out yourself. It's 15 minutes that you won't forget. And it pretty much reinforces everything that guy said. So for independent verification, if you think I've been exaggerating any of these points, go to that YouTube video and you'll see I haven't told you the half of it. Just plug in the words Colombian Fashion Week dash ass implants and couture. Nope, I'm not making this up and I'm not trying to gross you out either. Again, plug in Colombian Fashion Week dash ass implants and couture. And don't worry, it's not all in Spanish and it's not crass or gross either. In fact, it's an English journalist report of the exaggerated Colombian body styles in the middle class Colombian fashion world. Just what we've been talking about, right? And, again, how it came about in the 80s through the Pablo Escobar drug connection. Now, it does show both fashion worlds. It takes you into that high fashion world of the skinny, tall, anorexic types, and it takes you to the much more popular but much less publicized world of the runway models who are the curvy Sofia Vergara types, which kind of says it all. Now, believe it or not, the most amazing thing on this video is that the woman reporter actually visited Pablo Escobar's brother, who's still living. And also in Medellin, she goes to and reports on an extremely popular middle-class fashion runway show, and the entire theme of the show? Cocaine. Yep, cocaine, and this is now, not the 1980s. I mean, you really have to see it to believe it. This fashion show, which is open to the public, could never be done up in the first world, and you'll see why. Get this. On the fashion runway itself, there's a gigantic mountain of simulated cocaine that the models have to navigate and dodge as they walk around showing off the latest fashions. Really, you gotta see this. This is happening in modern-day middle-class Colombia. Oh, and by the way, on this short video, she visits one of Colombia's most well-known and well-respected butt implant surgeons. And when you see this, I want you to pay special attention to his clinic. You'll notice that the patients are greeted by a Catholic nun in the waiting room, and this nun is wearing her habit. I don't know what that's all about, but the Colombian guy that showed me this video at the Princess Hotel in San Salvador says it's very common in Colombia for surgeons, especially plastic surgeons, to have a Catholic nun on staff as a receptionist, greeter, or helper, whatever, which I'm sure goes a long way to impart a very calming effect on the patients, since 90-some percent of Colombia is Catholic. Now, you can have your doubts about this. Maybe she's just an older lady in a nun's costume hired to impersonate one or give that impression, but I doubt it. This is Latin America, you know, and I understand that if you impersonate a priest or a nun, well, let's just say when you die, you're going to be hanging with Jimi Hendrix instead of Mother Teresa. Now, I got to say, if someone would have just come up and told me that, I would have thought, yeah, right. But, no pun intended, you'll see it for yourself on this video, so believe me, take a look. Now, does that mean that the Catholic Church in any way endorses butt implants? Don't ask me. I won't touch that one with a 10-foot scalpel. Oh, and by the way, about Medellin, Colombia, and Pablo Escobar and all that, do you know that Pablo Escobar's house, the family home, has been turned into a shrine/museum, a tourist attraction that you got to pay to get in, and the curator says they get a couple of hundred visitors a week? Mostly, I bet, wearing vintage Pacino Scarface t-shirts. And if not, you can buy one right there at the gift shop for $10. So you can see for yourself how the guy lived, his wardrobe, his bad taste, his hot cars, his Harleys, his statues, his saunas, his gold-plated bathtub and jacuzzi. Oh, and by the way, speaking of nuns, his big house had a chapel with pews and candles and an altar and life-size statues of the Virgin Mary and all that. You try to figure that one out. As one visitor said, it's kind of Colombia's version of Graceland. And do note, at least among Colombia's middle and lower middle classes, Escobar was considered kind of a Robin Hood and was and is still as popular as Elvis. Who says you're never a hero in your hometown, huh? Anyway, I promise next time I'm down that way, I'm going to stop at that museum. Oh, and by the way, on that latest trip to Salvador, I couldn't help notice that it's getting around election time again. And down here in Latin America, you can always tell when that happens because suddenly, as you're driving on a desolate span of highway, there are ugly, gaudy political slogans painted everywhere in bright, putrid colors, too. And where do they paint this garbage? Why, on pristine cliffs, rocks, and mountainsides. Anything hard and solid that'll hold paint. And as it turns out, it's the lower middle classes that come out in force to despoil their own neighborhoods and countrysides because they're the only ones besides the poor that'll accept a couple of bucks to do that kind of work. And when the election's over, all that crap will remain until the sun and the rain slowly fade, peel, and degrade the paint. Then, after a couple of years of weathering, thankfully most of it's gone. But by then, it's usually election time again, and it's more the same. So, be prepared. If you're down here during election time, there'll be more than occasional hideous splotches of ugliness. But I must say, I did see a tiny light at the end of that tunnel. As I was driving through El Salvador, every once in a while I'd see a big billboard sign that said, get this, no fertilizante por voto, which means in a roundabout way in English, don't trade fertilizer for your vote. So what's that all about? Well, you might remember on a couple of shows a long time ago, I mentioned that politicians outright buy votes down here. They do that by first announcing that the buses will be free on voting day. Then, as the people get on or off the bus, they'll give them a free t-shirt or a hat or a little box lunch with chicken licking in it, all with political party graffiti plastered all over it. Just remember, since maybe 70 or 80% of the population makes $300 or $400 a month, most people, more than half the population, don't get the opportunity to go to chicken licking and have a junk food dinner. And for most people, bussing into the big city from the boonies that day is a big event. They get a free new t-shirt and a hat, a happy meal, and free fare on the bus. Now, isn't that worth a vote or two or three? Yep, there's a lot of that going around too. A lot of dead people voting down here, just like in Chicago. Did I say Chicago? Guess I've been down here way too long, huh? Oh, and by the way, most of the poor and lower middle class segments of Latin society, making up about 40% of the population, are not inclined to go out and buy brand new clothes. Oh, they might do it once in a while on Christmas and birthdays, but they most often, overwhelmingly, go to a store called a Paca store, P-A-C-A. Now, these are stores that sell used clothing from the first world, you know, the stuff that you donate to places like Goodwill, Salvation Army, and St. Vincent de Paul. Now, I know I mentioned this once in a long past show. I hope you do know that a good percentage of your donations, probably more than half, are getting bundled up in the States and being sent down here to Latin America and being sold. And people are making money off it. And it's not the poor people either. They're the ones that are buying the stuff. Because, like I said, they rarely buy new. Sure, Pacas sell that stuff dirt cheap, for maybe a buck or two for a t-shirt or a hat. But nevertheless, the discarded stuff you're giving away is being sold down here and making the wrong people wealthy. So you might say, so what? At the Salvation Army and Goodwill, etc., up in the States, they sell that stuff too. But come on, don't you think there's something just a bit cockeyed about repackaging this stuff and selling it to the really poor people down here instead of giving it away? Oh, and I forgot the real reason I brought this up. Now, I pop in and out of those pockets once in a while just to check the merchandise and just to see the kind of high-priced name brand stuff you guys give away because you porked out. And as you might expect, you never see the upper 1 or 2% of the wealthy classes in places like that. They're way too classist and stuck up. What would people think, huh? And even though vintage clothing has been in the States for quite some time now, try like almost 40 years since the 80s, you still won't see the kids of the filthy rich shopping at those pacas. But still, you see them wearing vintage clothes all the time. So what's up with that? Well, that's because, as you know already, every first world clothing outlet now sells distressed clothes and clothes that look like they're used, right? And that's usually pretty high buck stuff, isn't it? Now, on that same subject, once in a while I'll pop into one of these really big pacas that looks like a warehouse store, and I'll spot a lone gringo or gringa in there. As Captain Kirk would say, boldly going where no rich, stuck-up Latin has gone before. Or something like that. Because, you know, us gringos and gringas as a rule, us world travelers and expats anyway, really don't give a damn what other people think. Or we wouldn't be down here now, would we? I mean, really, most of the people up in the States told us we were nuts to come down here, so if we cared what other people thought, we wouldn't be here. I know, I just said that. But I digress as usual. Oh yeah, we were talking about elections. So as far as buying votes, the second most common way to do that down here is to give away sacks of flour and rice and beans a week or two before elections so the giver of the gift is burned into people's minds. So what you've got is freebies to the unwashed masses with party slogans plastered all over them. Even though probably all of those sacks of food were given as freebies from the UN and 1,000 first world charitable organizations. Not to mention those Girl Scout, Boy Scout, Cub Scout, Brownie charitable drives. So what happens then? Well, the stuff gets delivered and shoved into huge warehouses and held there by the politicians, sometimes for years, until a week or two before voting time. Then they paint it up with their logos, and they send out a bunch of trucks also painted up with political slogans. And there's always a guy in the back with a bullhorn announcing, "Free beans, free rice, free flour, whatever. Come and get it," courtesy of the political powers that be. And the guy with the bullhorn keeps on repeating who the gift came from. Nope, not from the original sender. Though sometimes you can see a faint imprint of that logo on the bag of beans. Anyway, that's how certain Latin political parties have stayed in power for sometimes more than 50 years. That's what you call Latin American-style democracy. It's like an English letter T-shirt I once saw down here. There was a picture of Uncle Sam, and below it it said, "Keep 'em stupid and simple," which I guess is really an international slogan for government now, isn't it? That said, let's change gears a bit here. Now, about a week ago, I was at one of these gigantic Latin food markets, you know, where they're so big you could get lost in them. Anyway, as I angled my way through a bunch of blind corners, people everywhere, chickens squawking, goats bleeding and all that. No, not bleeding, bleating. When suddenly I came upon a dead end, and there were about 10 or 15 people standing in line. Everyone pretty much lower middle class and indigenous types. Every last one of them was a woman, too. Some holding little kids and some balancing baskets and stuff on their heads, all waiting patiently in line for something. So what was it? Some kind of giveaway? The restroom, maybe? Nope. It was the local loan shark. So anyway, by hanging around a little while, I found out that's where you go to get a quick loan for a day or two or 10 or up to 30 days. And that's where you line up every day or every week or so to pay your VIG if you've taken out one of these loans. And as it turned out, all of the ladies in line worked somewhere or another near the marketplace or in it, so they were well-known ladies and had good enough reputations that they could get a quick, small loan without any collateral. So then you might well ask, what kind of terms were these ladies getting, and what were the average loan amounts? Oops, sorry, we'll have to wait till next week on the loan shark business. Now, before we go, I'd like to mention once again, if you're interested in coming to one of my expat wisdom seminars in Latin America, if there's enough interest, I'll put one on again in June or July. Anyway, to get in on the early bird rate, just send me an email at theexpatfiles@gmail.com or johnny@expatwisdom.com.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture in old